Are we good to go? Good morning. I'd like to welcome you all to the California Coastal Commission, another lovely sunny day here in Pismo Beach. And ask Ms. Miller to call the roll, please.
Commissioner Wickett. Commissioner Bochco. Commissioner Groom.
Present.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Here.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Here.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Here.
Chair Schellenberger.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Staff, do you want to walk us through the changes in the agenda today?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome, everyone. Members of the audience, if you wish to speak to the commission today, please fill out a speaker slip, bring it to the staff table, and Chair Schellenberger will call your name prior to the item being heard. We also ask that all cell phones be turned off while in the hearing room. They do interfere with our webcasting. And to go to the changes on today's agenda, on page 11, Item 5B, it's a consent calendar item, and it's postponed. And on page 12, there are no changes. And on page 13, item 14A, permit number 61213, the applicant is Sherman. That's moved to consent. And that concludes the changes for today.
Okay, thank you very much. Now we will go to public comment. And just so you all know, I have many more public comment slips, then we will have time this morning. So we'll spend the first 30 minutes on public comment, and I'll take the remainder of the public comments at the end of our business agenda. So we'll start with Arlene Versaw, Rachel Toady, and then Lynn Owen.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm a resident of the Napomo Mesa who can tell you firsthand...
We need your name for the record, please.
Sorry, it's Arlene Versaw. That the hazardous air pollution coming from the Oceana Dunes is clearly visible for hours on end, particularly during the windy season. My office faces a back sliding glass door, and I can visually see a curtain of dust moving across my patio. The fact that we have a health hazard on the Napomo Mesa is not open to debate. Regulatory agencies have the legal and the moral responsibility to protect public health. The APCD, the Air Pollution Control District here locally, has been trying to do just that, despite powerful opposition from the off-road vehicle lobby and advocates and from the state parks off-road vehicle division, which benefits financially from the operation of the park. We must stop exposing residents to what the American Lung Association deems to be carcinogenic PM10 particulate matter. And although State Parks is dragging its feet in every way it can, I'm here to ask you today to act quickly. Specifically, we need rapid approval of whatever temporary wind stations are needed to establish permanent monitoring stations under Rule 1001, which was adopted in response to this issue. Secondly, whenever State Parks finally does decide to propose something concrete by which to mitigate the dust coming from the Oceana Dunes, I'm asking you to streamline approval. You can help relieve those of us who are held hostage to this health hazard. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Raquel Toady?
Hello, I'm Rochelle Toady, and before I begin, I wanted to mention that there were people from yesterday that didn't get to speak, and so I had put my notice in this morning.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a handout for you. I'm Rochelle Toady, a resident of the Napomo Mesa, also a member of Concerned Citizens for Clean Air. And what I'm passing out is a CARB map for yesterday, which shows that we were one of only two locations in the state of California with probably air pollution that, well, definitely exceeded the state standard. We had 84 micrograms per cubic liter in the 24-hour average. And the state standard is 50. I also wanted to reiterate what Arlene has said, which is we need to have mitigation. Concerted Citizens for Clean Air has been working on this for 3 years. When the permit comes before you later this year, hopefully, with mitigation such as wind fences and hay bales, planting native plants and so forth, to cut down the particles rising from the state parks land and possibly county lands, we would ask that you take into consideration that 70, 80 days a year, we have exceeded state standards. Last year, we exceeded the federal standard 3 times. And during the day, we have spikes that go up. Yesterday, it was during the noon hour, 383 micrograms. We get up to 600 micrograms in an hour. Once it's up in that area and you can see the dust in the air, the public health officer says you shouldn't be out in it. You should just stay inside and run your air filter. So this is what we're faced with from now on until probably about November. Even though it rained last week, we exceeded the state standard yesterday. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Linda Owen, then Nancy Graves, then John Hetherington.
Good morning, Commissioners. Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I was lucky enough to join most of you on the tour of the Diablo plant, and I assume that it was to consider the seismic testing issues that are still ahead of you. What I wanted to make a point of is that I do understand from many people that speak, and even several of the employees there, is that this Coastal Commission would not support solar or wind at that location as a potential cogeneration to reduce the amount of radioactive waste that's being produced. So I just wanted to encourage you to understand that that is what the public is saying, and I would hope that that is not true, because I think at this point safer generation of alternative energy is of ultimate importance, and that is a location that we could see it done. I'd love to see the remaining $32 million spent on putting some windmills or panels up or wave gen. And then I come today, I did a handout yesterday, I don't know if you saw it, and these are the overview pictures. What's happening in Los Osos, the famous Los Osos wastewater project has begun. It's underway 5 months along now. But the question is, who is overseeing the work that is being done? What you see here is the restoration of the Midtown site where it was previously torn up to put the middle of town sewer that was then moved to the outside of town. Yet the restoration has been gone through 4 different changes. We spent $750,000 with engineering and the original grading. Now it's been graded 3 more times, and it's failing. It's said to be a restoration. It's also supposed to be a holding basin for up to 8 million gallons of the dewatering. Part of the problem with this project appears that there is no place to re-enter the water that is removed during the process, and when the sewer goes online and it's treated water needs to come back to the community. That's a huge concern because we are in major saltwater intrusion, losing our lower basin, and all we have left is our upper basin, yet 8 million gallons a day with no place to go during the dewatering process while they do the construction, as well as the 1 million gallons a day that needs to go back in. It's all pie in the sky. There is no oversight. There is no one that has come in to say, the one site that's supposed to take the 400,000 gallons is going to not hold it.
Thank you very much.
I beg you to ask for oversight.
Thank you.
Because your conditions are not being met. Thank you.
And as Nancy Graves is coming forward, I will just say I always find it slightly curious and amusing, people who assert that they know the Coastal Commission's position on anything that's never been before us.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Graves, and John Hetherington has ceded his time to me. John and I are both former residents of San Diego County and are concerned about the what's going on at the children's pool and the seals down there. I'm here on behalf of the La Jolla Friends of the Seals. In October, Dr. Jane Reldon spoke with you about what is actually happening down there, and she asked that John and I bring you an update on the latest developments. On December 15th, the guideline rope that was approved on the original coastal development permit was installed. This was not the permit you approved in July of 2012, but rather a previous permit which allows the rope to be up during pumping season. The rope is installed at only 130 feet because that was what was mistakenly measured by the city staff. Next slide, please. Graves.
That's okay. We're holding the time.
And next slide, please.
Oh, okay.
This is the letter on the... this erroneous measurement then became part of the coastal development permit and the site development permit. The original intent of the permit was to create an effective buffer zone by utilizing the rope with a 3-foot opening to allow access to the water. Yet the 130-foot rope resulted in an opening of 25 feet. Next slide, please. It did not make clear to people that they need to stay back from the seals. On December 21st, San Diego Mayor Filner approved and extended the rope to the originally intended length of 152 feet, reducing the 25-foot gap to the intended 3 feet. Next slide. However, the city will need to go through the process of amending the coastal development permit, and we have concerns whether or not this will pass since the San Diego Planning Commission denied the year-round rope. Next slide, please. We are happy to report that since the mayor lengthened the rope, it has been working quite well, and you'll see from this slide the people behind the rope. Next slide, please. And again, the people behind the rope. Next slide, please. And again, the people behind the rope, except when provocateurs encourage people to cross it. At that December 21st hearing, Mayor Filner referred to those who have made it their mission to get rid of the seals as professional harassers. A group calling themselves the Seal Bombs are using social media to make threats, as shown in this Facebook post, stating, if the seal activists stay at the children's pool, members of Seal Bombs will be visiting the seals at 3 to 4 a.m. in the morning to disperse them off the beach. Another post by a group called Marine Mammal Protection Association is promoting beach tours and then undermines the intention of the rope by calling it only a guideline. People can get close to the seals and their pups by going around it. This sign, next slide, please. This sign on the seaward side of the rope says the beach is open to the public at all times. If here to view the seals, please stand behind the viewing rope. If you wish to beach comb, blah, 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 you may go anywhere on this beach that does not disturb a seal. No one has the authority to tell you otherwise. Enjoy the beach, respect the wildlife. While this statement is true, the intent is to encourage people to cross the rope. Neither this sign, next slide, please, or the next one carry any regulatory authority. You will note that the sign says, do not disturb the seals. Yet when the professional harassers were asked, they responded that flushing the seals and even touching them is not disturbing them. The ranger has said, If touching and petting doesn't cause the animal to flush, it is not a violation of the MMPA. Next slide, please. The professional harassers have incited the public for years. The professional harassers would be much happier if the seals were not at home on this beach. The group of homeowners who don't like the public at the children's pool beach would be much happier if the seals were not at home on this beach. Next slide, please. The political climate, which altered your strong stance in the July decision, will affect the amended CDP processing an LCP amendment based on ESHA and a CDP for beach closure during pupping season. When that time comes, we ask for the commissioners to support the harbor seals. Thank you.
Thank you very much. C. Height. Your name for the record.
Dr. Sue.
What I deserve, may the coming year not throw a single curve. May I hurt nobody, may I tell no lies. If I can't go on, give me the strength to try. Bring the old year out, bring the new year in, bring us all good luck. Let the good
may you win.
Thank you very much. Now a little bit of honor system. Is there anybody else who put a speaker slip in who was here yesterday? Oh, well, we're not going to get to all of them. All right. I think Eric Greening has his hand up.
Thank you. I very much appreciate it. This, and if I can do it in less than 3 minutes, but I would appreciate you accommodate everyone who's been waiting since yesterday. It's hard to have a conversation. I'm going to be speaking to some things that were said from staff Wednesday morning, and I'm hoping we can complete this conversation before you're all running for planes. I very much appreciate the staff response to the public concern shared on the LESS, so-called low-energy seismic survey. And what we were given to understand is that State Lands Commission is undertaking environmental review of the old permit to see if it still works. Obviously, I would vastly prefer that you be the lead agency on this. You have the Coastal Act, you have the expertise, but State Lands is doing it. So first question is, are you then officially a responsible agency? And then the next question is, in exercising your responsible agency responsibilities, is it your intent for this exercise to simply take the form of staff comments on scoping documents, draft EIRs, et cetera, or does it include board involvement? And I would like to strongly request that it include board involvement, given the considerable difference between the staff recommendation for your November meeting and your board's ultimate findings. It was clear that staff needed your board's direction. They had done a lot of very good research, but to come up with the exact right appropriate findings, they needed your board's direction. So I think your board needs to agendize at strategic points such as scoping and commenting on a document. Your board needs to agendize appropriate action as a responsible agency. I also want to address, obviously, the data we have is anecdotal. For example, you saw Dr. Height's video yesterday of the incredible explosion of life off Avila. And we can tell you that that lasted until a boat for low-energy seismic surveying appeared in the area. And then it started getting very quiet and stayed quiet for a while. The fishermen can tell you about diminished catches. It's true. All we have is anecdotal. But the reason it's anecdotal is because State Lands Commission did not require any environmental review. They did not require baseline data. There is no official information gathering process that has preceded or accompanied the low energy seismic survey. And I would ask for a moratorium on all such activities until documents vetted by your commission using the data that we have can be done. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to take those folks who were here yesterday and had a speaker slip, if you would just line up and come up one at a time. Give me your name as you take the mic.
I'm Carol Georgie. I'm representing the Surfrider Foundation. And I enjoyed last night meeting many of you and thanking many of you. We are also bringing concerns to the Coastal Commission's attention to consider the low energy testing, because we believe the results in being out of compliance with the Coastal Act. LESS does not consider the potential physical harm people could receive while recreating in the water, nor do they warn the public. LESS does not consider the biological impacts of level A at 180 decibels and level B of 160 decibels of mammals, and they are operating at higher than those decibels. They are not getting federal permits, and State Lands is not advising them to. The possible violations are mammal monitor reports and spotters, no notification to fishers, possible high-level decibels, not compensating local nearshore fishers, and emissions on the permits. We hope that by Surfrider bringing these concerns to the Coastal Commission's attention, that you will seriously evaluate how the Geophysical Survey Permit Program is in violation of its own permit requirements from California State Lands Commission, and is also threatening the vitality of the Coastal Act. We are working with other groups to pressure California State Lands Commission to either halt or revoke the low energy testing. And we would like to thank you for your leadership on this issue. I have been working with local fishermen. The oldest one, who's 90 years old, spoke with you on Wednesday, and that was Travis. And we had a nice lunch with Travis, and he told us all the history because he remembers it all. And he said he's never seen it so bad in his over 50 years of fishing as after the low energy testing. His permits are for halibut and sole, and his number, he had to lay off all of his crew off his boat, and his numbers are half or less of those two. The main damage happened in the shallow waters, which is the nearshore fishermen. And PG&E still does not pay or acknowledge that. They are using statistics that are gathered from the deep sea fishermen mixed in with the nearshore. So the violation of the permit is to not notify the fishermen and not to compensate them. And this is hurting local members of our community. And I thank you for everything you're doing and your leadership. Thank you.
And thank Carol, I do not have a speaker slip for you. I think you probably were not here at the end of our meeting yesterday. There were some people here at the end that I rolled forward to today. So would you please fill out another speaker slip? And I guess Vanessa may have it. Were you here at the end of yesterday?
Yeah, I had a speaker slip in yesterday.
That's not my question. I'm only taking those folks who were here when we finished.
I had a speaker slip in.
Okay. At this point, we've gone for a half an hour. I've taken those people who were here at the end of yesterday. Then please come forward. I didn't see you. And then the remainder of the speaker slips we'll take at the end of today's business, which won't be that late.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Katrina Dolinsky. I'm a South San Luis Obispo County resident living on the Napoma Mesa and one of many others affected by the PM10 dust originating from county-owned La Grande Tract that allows the ODSVRA use and management of this fragile dune area for off-road recreation. On the first visual, please take a look. Pictures, they say, are worth a thousand words, and I have only three to share with you today. I hope to give you a greater awareness of what many downwind residents believe has been a history of non-compliant stance by state parks, the first to accept scientific studies done that clearly show a cryptic biotic dune crust does naturally exist. Two, to accept the responsibility for the origin of this dune dust caused by continual destruction of crust formation by OHV use. And three, to act expediently with appropriate agencies to mitigate this serious dust pollution at the Sand Highway entrance. Sand Highway entrance is on this map. If you take a look at the middle of the map, the arrow is pointing from the left-hand side in the blue, the San Luis Obispo County Low Grande Tract area. At the beginning, it says Sand Highway, marker posts 4 and 5. And the direction of the prevailing wind comes directly into the area where the arrow is pointing to, Calendar Grove area and the surrounding communities. One of the ways that we look at is an appropriate response to this would be at Sand Highway entrance is to move this Sand Highway entrance off La Grande Tract as entrance to their landlocked recreational area. And so that revegetation of this fragile area and installation of sand fences and hay bales can be immediately implemented. And outgoing traffic could be via the Willow Road exit. We have seen in the past with emergency vehicles leaving that area through the oil refinery area at ConocoPhillips. Responsible park management includes not only wildlife preservation, but human lives beyond park boundaries who don't have a choice of air to breathe on 90 or more plume days per year. Intensification of land use under the LCP also negatively affects us downwind with expansion of OHV activities such as newly permitted annual Huckfest, truck racing across the dunes, bringing more damage to this overused sand highway entrance. Note the red arrow of the prevailing wind and visible PM10 plume. This is going to be seen on the second map. We can move it to the second visual, please. Again, please note the oil refinery location on this map. We have two of them, visuals. One is a normal clear day and below a plume day, May 28, 2011. The oil refinery on the left-hand side of the photo, and remember that there are three communities in close proximity.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And again, I just want to thank those people who did stay with us all the way to the end of yesterday and then agree to come back this morning as opposed to extending yesterday. And I think it was good judgment. I think we're all a lot fresher this morning, so thank you. I will, the remainder of the public comments we'll take at the end of our business agenda, and I will go back to Dr. Lester.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. On Wednesday, we trailed item 19B till this time slot, and this is a status report on public access and state parks and the coordination that we're doing with state parks. We are very fortunate today to have the new director, Anthony Jackson, here today to speak for a minute to us and give us an orientation to some of these issues. And he'll be up in a minute, but I briefly wanted to frame out some of the issues that you're well aware of and the importance of our partnership with state parks. And the partners with our other state agencies are really critical to the success of our program, as you know, and state parks is one of those very important partners, particularly in terms of our mission of providing and protecting public access to the coast. Something along the lines of one-third of our coast, thereabouts, is in state parks management, and so they are a critical partner in the successful provision or protection of public access. There's also this integral relationship often between the work that you do, the planning and the permitting work that you do, and ultimately the lands that parks ends up acquiring and managing. So two good examples in this area, the Hearst Ranch coastline, which is just up the coastline here to the north. Some 10 miles of that coastline were acquired in a conservation easement and given in fee to the state, and is now being managed by state parks. And of course, your work in the LCP actions in the late, actually your whole history and culminating in the late 1990s by not approving an LCP amendment that would have resulted in certain resort development and other activities up there was a piece of that puzzle that led to the ultimate acquisition and easements in that area. So there's this necessary role that they play in relationship to the work that you do. Another good example is Harmony Coast State Park, which is a little closer here also to the north, but you did a permit action there that ultimately was not implemented, and the property was acquired and is now in state parks' hands. I also wanted to remind you that it's not just public access, but other resource protection goals that we share, including restoration and protection of sensitive habitats and wetlands. And so you're very familiar, for example, of the work that we did together with parks and the Malibu Lagoon restoration. And while a controversial project, working closely with parks was really important to keeping that project on track and moving forward, and it's having been successfully implemented over the last several months. So with that, I did want to introduce the director and welcome him and have a brief conversation with him about our work.
Great. Thank you. Welcome, Director Jackson. And if I could just ask the folks in the back to please take the conversation out of the room. Thank you.
Well, first of all, let me thank you all for inviting me here, Charles, and this originates from a dialogue we had earlier in my tenure, which has been so long. All of today, I think, is the seventh week anniversary of my being in state parks, and this week also marks my one-year anniversary from retiring from the Marine Corps. So I was very happy in retirement and was enjoying California's natural beauties. I had bought an RV last January as a retirement gift to my wife and I, and we had spent, I think about 9,700 miles on the road in the first 5 months I had it, and seeing some of the wonderful beaches as well as the Sierras and the desert, we were really having a good time. State parks got in trouble. I was just a citizen of California, so I sent state parks some money to save the park near my home, Palomar Mountain, because I thought parks were incredibly valuable. And then I went about my business and headed up to the Sierras to support my young son, who was hiking the Tahoe Rim Trail. So I was his supply officer. That was greatly reduced from being a major general in the Marine Corps. But I was doing some work. I was very pleased to hear some people mention renewable energy and those kinds of things, because that was, I personally know the cost of oil to the United States, having been to places like Iraq and and Afghanistan and the Horn of Africa. And so I see the price that young Americans pay for that. So I was a real advocate for renewable energy and what DOD was doing. And so I somehow got to be known from Secretary Laird in my advocacy for those things and for protecting Santa Ana Fe State Beach when it was asked if we could turn it into a turnpike. I was the commanding general of all Marine Corps installations west of the Mississippi, and I convinced the Secretary of the Navy, along with other partners like Surf Riders, to not allow that project to go through. Secretary Laird remembered that, and I was in Washington, D.C., doing energy and national security work for the Rockefeller Family Fund and Pew Trust, and he called me in my hotel room when I don't know what kind of intelligence network Secretary Laird has, but I wish I had the same one when I was in the Marine Corps. We'd have gotten Osama bin Laden a lot sooner. And he said, hey, listen, I know you, and I think you've got the leadership and the whatever complimentary terms he pulled out to come and take over state parks. And I said, well, it would seem an odd marriage to me. And he says, no, because we just need what we've seen in your leadership. And so I said, you know, 37 years ago, I joined the Marine Corps without getting my wife's permission. And I've paid for it ever since. And so I said, I know the trouble that state parks is in, and I believe it worthy of coming out of a very joyful retirement to help out for a few years, but Susan must give me permission. And she did, and I was surprised. And so I told him that, and then the question is, why? And it's probably the same reason why I'm in Sacramento now, at least 4 days a week, and on the road to state parks and places like this. I joined the Marine Corps because deep inside of me, there was something that said service before self. And that's because so many other people in this nation have stepped to the fore to make it possible for me to be in the positions of responsibility that I've had through not only my Marine Corps career, but every other opportunity. It goes all the way back to, you can name it, from the first slave brought to America, to our Civil War, to our Civil Rights Movement, to all of the things that people have done to make this nation what it is and to protect what this nation represents. The state of California is avant-garde in all that it does, whether you're talking about preserving the quality of our air, and I hear you all loud and clear who have mentioned that this morning, to renewable energy sources, to protecting the environment writ large, and it has a wealth of beauty that people internationally want to see. So I'm here to serve you before finally settling down and putting hundreds of thousands of miles on that RV. It comes at some sacrifice, but it comes with great satisfaction. The thing that I want to bring to state parks is teamwork. We've been talking about issues. The state parks has hit the headlines over and over for the last 7 months. We still have one more investigation, one more audit to come out, so we will reoccur on the front pages in terms of our money management. But let me assure you, the people of state parks, just like Marines, I find them, because they have a great passion for what they do. They have a great passion for the natural resources of California, the cultural resources of California. And they seek to preserve those just as this commission seeks to preserve those. So I wanted, and I was very glad to receive an invitation here, because what I want to do is forge teamwork. We have like $1.4 billion, depends on whose estimate you see, arrears in deferred maintenance in state parks. We've been given a mandate by the legislature to generate our own funds. Our budgeting from the general fund has gone from 91% of our operating costs to 27%. We will be working with you to on our revenue-generating ideas, but we will have to generate revenues to keep all 280 of our state parks open, 1.4 million acres, a third of the California coastline, open to the public and maintained. I want to thank you all for giving me this opportunity. I will be back. I assure the people of this area that I will be back to enjoy and to have discussions with them on their concerns. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Director. Thank you very much. I think this is kind of, you have a huge challenge. Everybody knows that. As do we, as the mandate for protecting our coastal resources, making sure that the public has access to the coast, which is one of our, as you know, kind of one of the most important policies in our Coastal Act. So I look forward to kind of a new era. We have a relatively new executive director ourselves and you, and finding creative ways to make sure that both of our missions can be met. It's always a difficulty between sister agencies, particularly when one's regulatory and does have permit authority over another. But we have some wonderful examples of changing cultures and how we work together. Our relationship with Caltrans used to be extremely contentious, and I think now is not. And we are able to almost always in the last few years do just what I say, meet both of our missions. So I'm looking forward to that between Parks and the Coastal Commission. And let me ask, are there any commissioners who would like to ask Director Jackson a question or observations, anything? Commissioner Brannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize for not catching your presentation, but the good news is it's web-streamed and archived, so I will go on and listen to that. I do appreciate you being here. And I think the Chair brought up a good point. And while it is sort of a seated position that Caltrans sits here as a non-voting member, when you think about how many state parks are on the coast, that perhaps there should be a liaison position in some way, shape, or form to at least be able to head off some of the... By the time it gets to your level, it's this, and we're all dug in. And maybe there's a way of perhaps softening that before we get there. So if, I don't know how we, maybe it's quarterly weigh in, or I don't know how that happens, but I do realize that we've made a lot of headway with, and Caltrans with us too, both ways. But I do think it would be a tremendous opportunity for both of us to figure out how we make that work. Yeah. Thank you.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, that's a great idea, and to date, I've been very happy that I think we're establishing now a collaborative working relationship so that hopefully we can do that at the staff level and avoid those kinds of situations when it gets to your point.
And one thing that I would like to say is that we're in the midst of a great opportunity, actually. I mean, in the midst of bad, you know, the cloud that currently hangs over for the financial thing, it does give us a catalyst for change. And whatever relationships, I mean, the one thing that I'd say that a general officer brings is that he knows that he is not the smartest person in a room if there's more than two or three people in the room, unless he handpicks them based on aptitude scores, okay? Yeah, okay, you. I'm the smart, okay. So one thing that you do learn is teamwork and building a team. You have to take all of those great minds around you, and now I look at this commission as part of my network. And from that network, you will get great ideas, great courses of action to accomplish things. And so I look as myself and parks as part of a wider network, and all of those brain cells in that network I will be glad to borrow at any time. And so team building is the key, and I think that that's what we're doing. And Charles has been in my office, and we're, you know, it's a new beginning.
Great. Commissioner Zimmer.
Thank you. I want to say welcome, and thank you so much for being willing to serve. I've read about your past service and background, and so impressed by your willingness to continue to serve now. I especially am impressed by what I'm hearing from you is that we need to recognize both agencies that we actually do have the same mission, I think, and that is to make sure that this coastline remains available to the people of California and to others from all over the world as a resource to be preserved. I think that there are going to be a lot of opportunities to work through and resolve the financial constraints that sometimes lead us to different concerns or different priorities. And I also want to put out that I think that there's going to be some great opportunities to include the private sector in developing plans and programs for parks that are adjacent to private visitor-serving accommodations. I've seen some of this in my own county already on an informal basis where the private sector is able to contribute to maintenance and programs. So I just want to say I'm really looking forward to a great relationship.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I also want to welcome you, and I look forward to your leadership. Your passion and love for the subject matter certainly comes through. You're especially an individual that has been around and knows how important these resources are. I think I'm from the city of Oceanside.
Oh, okay.
And because we have the base and we have this kind of strong sense of appreciation for what we have, we do end up having a lot of volunteers. And I think that is a place that we'll be looking toward to ensuring public access for all, for our parks. These are beautiful resources, and again, I look forward to your leadership.
Yeah, the incredible thing to me is that there may be about 4,000 employees, either full-time or part-time, in parks, but there's probably 10 times that many volunteers who keep, and some of them I know are represented in here today, just to say hello to the new park director, but it is an incredible passion that flows through this state, and I'm going to try to harness that more and more efficiently so that maybe... And they are actually what's keeping parks open, by the way, I think, to a large measure.
Commissioner Wickett.
Yes, instead of repeating what other commissioners have said, I just want to say I support that and very much appreciate your being here, very much appreciate your remarks. And, you know, it's my feeling that organizations are able to change either when they are flush with cash and are at the apex of their power and have that leverage of change, or when they are in the opposite position, not flush with cash and at the bottom, and they can look at things in a new way. Sorry you're not at the top, but really look forward to working with you, and appreciate, you know, humility and creativity are two amazing weapons, and when they're combined with people who want the best for you, particularly widespread in the state, I think amazing things can come, and I'm hoping on this commission that we can all work with you to that end and come up with new paradigms and a whole new beginning. So thank you for being here.
Well, appreciate that. The coming from the Marine Corps, you know, is it when I was a young lieutenant, we were a pretty raggedy outfit. In 1975, 76, 76. It wasn't until a Californian came to office that we began to heal, and that was President Reagan. Because, you know, you talk about austere organizations. I'm kind of used to that. I used to buy the toilet paper for my Marines because we couldn't afford it. And, you know, and if something broke in the barracks, I'd buy doorknobs and windows for the barracks. And so I'm kind of used to being an austere organization, but I also got to see it rise from the ashes and do what it's done historically over the last 20 years.
So. No wonder they were devoted to you. Toilet paper.
Yeah, yeah. Don't look too deep into my marine biography, because you'll find some interesting stories about toilet paper.
Okay, another time. Commissioner McClure.
Yes, I too am happy that you came, and thank you for your leadership that you're going to serve for the state parks. I live up in Del Norte County, where we have the Redwood State and National Park Partnership. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of teamwork that has allowed the state and national parks to work together. And I'm hoping that that will replicate itself through the state, because it seems to work very well. And our park association, we do endless hours to make sure that we have the money to give state parks in order to produce pamphlets and do educational programs. So it's a working partnership up there.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Commissioner Groom.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson, for being here this morning. Yeah. I represent the Central Coast, San Mateo County, Monterey, and Santa Cruz counties.
Okay.
The thing for me about our parks, whether they're local or state or federal, is that they're such precious assets because they are free to the public for the most part.
Yeah.
And so those families who don't have a lot of extra income can use their parks as their personal picnic grounds and their personal fitness centers.
Right.
And so we want to do whatever we can to help you to make sure that those parks stay open and stay alive.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for comments. And I was in Monterey last weekend is where I was. I have to kind of remember where I was on a map on any given weekend.
Well, I'd love it if you'd come to San Mateo County. Yeah. We would introduce you to all of our volunteers and our wonderful park foundation.
I will be there. Okay. All right.
Thank you very much for coming.
Well,
and I look forward to a productive, fruitful relationship between the two departments. It'll be great.
I thank you all for the warm welcome.
Yes, and thank you again. We do have a number of things underway and ongoing working relationship, so we're looking forward to building on that and continuing. So thank you again.
All right. Thank you very much.
And we'll continue to stay indoors with very few windows and do the coastal protection work. I recommend you go out and enjoy it.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. I'll take that as a release.
All right. Thank you.
Moving on?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That takes us to item 5, which is the consent calendar for the South Coast District, Orange County. There is one item. The conditions are acceptable to the applicant. We have not received any comments on this item. Therefore, staff recommends the commission approve the consent calendar.
Are there any ex partes on consent? Seeing none, it's been moved by
consent.
Commissioner Kinsey, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we approve the consent calendar.
And item 6 is the consent calendar for the San Diego District. There is one item. There is an addendum on this item, including a minor clarification to special condition number 2, which addresses the handling of soils containing aerial lead deposits. There have been no public comments on this item, and staff recommends the commission approve this consent calendar.
Any ex partes on the consent calendar? Seeing none, moved by Commissioner Kinsey, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we approve the consent calendar.
And the next item, 7, is the Deputy Director's Report for the South Coast District, Orange County. This is the report of waivers, non-material amendments, and extensions. Today, I only have 6 waivers to report. They are the type that are routinely approved by the commission. No public comments have been received on any of these items. Therefore, staff recommends the commission concur with the executive director and approve the deputy director's report for Orange County.
Any unwilling to see unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
That takes us to item 9A. This is the City of Laguna Beach LCP Amendment 3-11. It's a request by the City of Laguna Beach to amend the implementation plan portion of the certified LCP to revise the procedures for public noticing of discretionary permits, to change the required content, and to standardize noticing procedures for different types of discretionary permits. The staff is recommending denial of submittal and approval with several suggested modifications. all of which insert a phrase where necessary to acknowledge the notice procedures for coastal development permits are contained in a specific section in the regulations for coastal development permits. That's section 25.07.014. The city has concurred that these changes are necessary to conform the implementation plan with the noticing requirements of the Coastal Act and the Commission's LCP regulations, which differ from those proposed in the LCP amendment for all the other discretionary permits. With the suggested modifications, the proposed implementation plan amendment is adequate to carry out the provisions of the certified land use plan, and they are acceptable to the city. The motions and resolutions are on page 4 of the staff report.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on this item? Seeing none, I have no speaker slips. The will of the commission.
Madam Chair.
Yeah. Commissioner
I move
Kinsey.
The commission reject implementation plan amendment number 311 for the city of Laguna Beach as submitted and recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Kinsey, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Just briefly, you did say that the city was comfortable with it, and this was really just to bring their noticing procedures into conformance with our state statutory responsibility?
That's correct.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any unwillingness for you, Nat?
I have a question.
Sorry. Yes.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Yes. I noticed that there is a difference in the noticing requirements for tenants of commercial and residential and owners. That's for property owners, it's within 300 feet of the property line of the project site, and for commercial tenants, commercial and apartment tenants, it's 100 feet. Why is that?
You're talking about what was proposed by the city for other discretionary permits. And that's, you know, whatever they choose to do for those discretionary permits. That's why with our changes, we're assuring that the notice provisions for coastal development permits are for two property owners and residents within 100 feet.
I guess the question that I have is, because I'm assuming that businesses and those that are on site have more of a observation of day-to-day and what is going on. And so, yeah, I see that it's 300 feet for noticing for property owners, but many times property owners are out of town, rely on their tenants to, you know, really kind of hunt them down and say, okay, this is what's happening. But I've noticed that there is a difference. There's 100 feet versus 300 feet, and I just wondered why there was not more of a uniform requirement.
Again, I don't know if there is a representative from the City of Oceanside here, but this 300. I'm sorry, we're in Laguna Beach. The requirement, I know this isn't answering your question, but at least for those projects that require a coastal development permit, the notice for both tenants and property owners would be 100 feet.
Right.
I don't really know why the city has chosen to make
All right.
a difference.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the commission hereby denies the certification of the implementation plan amendment. Commissioner Kinsey.
Yes, I'd like to also move that the commission certify the implementation plan amendment number 311 for the city of Laguna Beach if it is modified as suggested by the staff.
Moved by Commissioner Kinsey, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No.
Commissioner Brennan.
No.
Any unwillingness to be unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the commission hereby certifies the implementation plan amendment 3-11 for the city of Laguna Beach, if modified as suggested, and adopts the staff recommendations in the staff report. Thank you.
And that takes us to item 9B. This is a city time extension request for the city of Newport Beach LCP amendment 1-12. It's a request to extend the 60-day time limit for commission action on this LCP amendment. It's an implementation plan amendment to include an exemption to the 35-foot height limit for a 73-foot-tall architectural tower feature at the Marina Park site on the Balboa Peninsula in Newport Beach. The coastal issues associated with this architectural feature were before the commission as part of a coastal development permit application for the Marina Park development, approved by the commission last year with a condition requiring the tower to conform to the 35-foot height limit. The city has processed this land use plan amendment to address the possible prejudice to the LCP concerns raised by the commission at that time. The staff is reviewing the information submitted by the city to support the proposed LUP amendment, and the city has submitted a letter in the addendum that supports this time extension. We're targeting bringing this back for your review at the March hearing in San Diego. The staff is recommending the commission extend the deadline for commission action for 1 year, and the motion is on page one of the staff report. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on this?
Madam Chair, I met this morning at 7:30 with Don Smits, and he explained a little bit about the need for a time extension to me.
Thank you. Anybody else? Ex parte, Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yesterday, January 10th, I had a brief conversation with Mr. Smits in regard to this item. I mentioned that I'd seen the letter from the city and where they were in the project. He said they were doing architectural drawings and getting ready to let contracts, and so it was important that this item, while they are not against the extension, would certainly like to have it honored and see it come back in the March meeting.
Commissioner McClure.
Yes, I too had a brief conversation with Don Schmidt about the extension and the excitement that staff is looking at the March meeting.
Any other ex partes? Seeing none, I have no speaker slips. I'll go to Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on the city of Newport
Excuse
Beach.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Sorry.
Changed jobs. All right, I apologize for that. I'll open the public hearing. Patrick Alford.
Morning, Commissioners. Patrick Alford, Planning Manager for the City of Newport Beach. I just want to express my thanks and appreciation to your staff for the speed in which they deemed our application complete. We have every confidence that they'll be able to use this time extension to complete their analysis in time for the March hearing. And as indicated, this amendment will allow the Marina Park project, which is a worthwhile project, to proceed. And we're looking forward to seeing before you in March.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Staff has nothing to add, I assume?
Except that I think, as I said, it was an implementation plan amendment at one point, but this is a land use plan amendment.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to note the word speed, too, which we don't hear a lot.
Thank you. Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on the City of Newport Beach Local Coastal Program Amendment NPB-MAJ-1-12 for a period of 1 year and recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Brennan, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Only briefly. I do, again, appreciate staff's, while we understand it does take time and not to rush in so we get the analysis right. Certainly we heard that yesterday. In all the myriad of details that went into the different items we dealt with yesterday, that's not something to be rushed through. And I do appreciate staff taking the time, but also want to recognize I do also, and I think this commission, having what is a target as a time certain and the March and having that come to us with the extension really helps me in terms of supporting motions like this. Thank you.
Commissioner Kinsey, would you like to speak to your second?
Thank you. No, I think that the points about processing expeditiously are obviously important, and we do appreciate it for sure. But I also want to acknowledge that this is an amendment that came out of the good process of the commission, whereby that particular feature was inconsistent with the land use plan. And so we laid out a clear path for how that could be revisited, and that's being followed through on. I think that's just an indication of the clarity of the staff's recommendation originally. Thanks.
Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the time extension has been granted.
And the next item is 11A. I have a PowerPoint on this item, please. And there is also an addendum on this item. Did I say what? Okay, I'm said 11A. Boy, it's 10A. It's Friday. This is an amendment to a permit for a 23-unit condominium development on a blufftop property overlooking the beach up coast of San Clemente Pier in San Clemente. And this will resolve a long-standing violation that's associated with the installation of a gate across a public viewing easement without a coastal development permit. Slide one shows the site today. The condo development was approved in 1988 for 30 units. The permit was issued in 1990, and then there was an amendment approved in 98 to reduce the number of units to 23. And the applicant has indicated that condo development was completed in 2001. It is located down coast of Loma Linda Park. This is a canyon park and parking lot providing access to the beach. And the bluff is not subject to wave action here. It's located inland of the railroad tracks and the coastal trail. Could you go to slide two, please? This shows the site as it existed in 1987. Due to the historic public use of the site to access the beach and for blufftop viewing, the commission required easements be recorded on the site to protect these public access and viewing opportunities. Slide three, please. And this is a 2010 photo of the site. A vertical access way is constructed and utilized by the public on the northern portion of the property. Slide four, please. It shows the locations of the access easement on the left-hand side and the viewing easement seaward of the existing condominium development. The view easement was recorded and granted to the city, and the existing path is consistent with the permit, but at the time of completion of the development, a gate and fence were installed across the required viewing easement, which staff did not discover until 2009. The applicant was notified at that time that the gate and fence were not in compliance with the commission action on the coastal development permit and was therefore a violation. This permit application has been submitted by the applicant to resolve the pending enforcement action on the property. Slide five, please. It shows the views afforded to the public from the blufftop edge of the subject property, looking up coast and down coast. Slide six is taken from Loma Linda Park, showing the existing vertical access that was required by the commission and is used by the public today. Slide seven is taken from the street, Arenosa Lane, showing the locations of the viewing access and also the vertical access to the beach required by the commission. Slide eight, please, shows the existing gate, fence, and signage. Apparently, the gate has been left unlocked during daytime hours, with signage indicating the public viewing access is available as shown. However, the gate is not permitted. The staff indicated to the applicant we could not support after-the-fact approval of the existing 6 to 7 foot high steel fence and gate due to its height and design that we believe is a significant deterrent to the public use of the viewing easement. Therefore, to resolve the violation, the proposed amendment includes several things. It includes removal of the existing unpermitted 6 foot 8 inch high steel fence and gate, and installation of a new 5 foot high wider fence and gate, which would be time locked and located approximately 10 feet from the curb. Also proposed is a new extension of the existing blufftop viewing path, approximately 40 feet along the blufftop, and creation of two new overlook areas along the blufftop. And if you could go to the next slide, please. That's shown on this slide, how the blufftop viewing area actually would be enhanced with this proposal. There's also proposed is removal of existing landscaping at the entrance to the blufftop viewing path that could deter public use and views, and its replacement with native California shrubs. The proposed gate includes an automatic timer that will be set prior to the start of each year to open daily and be left in an unlocked open position from the time of the earliest sunrise to lock at the time of the latest sunset. And although a gate is not preferred, the original commission action requiring the view easement required only that it be open for public use during the daytime. The subject gate, as proposed with a time lock mechanism in an open position during the day, will provide for continued and uninterrupted public pedestrian viewing access during the day and is the most effective means to limit access at night. The conditions of approval are designed to assure and facilitate compliance by requiring the default, in the event of a malfunction, to be in the open position. And if there are any impediments to access, such as a gate malfunction or an overt action to change the hours or block the pathway, these violations must be remedied within 30 days of notice, and if that doesn't occur, that the gate must be removed. I'd like to draw your attention to the addendum. There's one letter of comment and a letter of opposition from two of the residents of the condo development. Also included in the addendum are revisions to the staff report. Some are in response to the points made in the letters regarding past commission requirements, and some are in response to the applicant's concerns regarding timing requirements for compliance. As a result of the opposition, the staff is recommending the indemnification condition against attorney fees be added in the addendum. We believe these changes, with these changes, the recommendation is acceptable to the applicant. We think that approval of the gate and its potential to deter public use will be offset by the proposed improvements to the Blufftop viewing trail and the vista points. And with the conditions, the project will result in an enhanced public viewing opportunity when compared to the existing conditions and the requirements of the previous permit, and that they can be found consistent with the public access and recreation policies of the Coastal Act. And if the commission approves this with conditions today, that would resolve a longstanding violation on this site. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you. Do we have any ex partes on this item? Seeing none, I have one speaker slip, the applicant, Mr. Stone, who says he's here to answer any questions that we might have. So I'll come back to the commission. Commissioner Zimmer. Well, why don't you come forward and fill out another speaker slip? I have for public comment. Okay. All right, we're like a little shaky here. I see you put the wrong number down. All right, go ahead.
Yes, I apologize. My name is Steve Ray. I'm here on behalf of the Orange County Environmental Community, speaking on this issue. My other job, you know, is with Banning Ranch Conservancy, and I'll be talking about that later. We're here to support the staff's recommendation. The primary thing that we're looking at here is that while, you know, we certainly want to ensure that there's public access to the site, and that the access that has not been there, we certainly don't want it to go rewarded. But we don't want to be vindictive or anything like that either. The key is that there is an opportunity here to work this out between the commission, the staff, and the applicant in this case. It started with an enforcement action and became, as you know, now an application. This is the kind of settlement that we all look forward to and think is the best way to proceed. And, of course, we wish this were to work or could work in every single case out there. It does not, because sometimes applicants aren't so ready to compromise and to do the things that we need to do to resolve these issues. But in this case, we have an opportunity to resolve this. The one question I might have, though, is that regarding the accessibility, I know gate, a lot of people look at a gate and say, oh, well, I can't go there. But I would hope that there's some, and I didn't notice it in the report, but if there's some sort of signage that might indicate to people that this is an accessible facility or an accessible gate, and a sign there that would proclaim that accessibility and the given indication of what the times would be, the hours would be for that accessibility. And with that, I think then, you know, people would be more likely to use it because gates tend to shut people off. And I know there is some opposition to the gate idea in the environmental community. But if there were a means like a signage so people would know that accessibility is there, I think that would help resolve that one concern in the environmental community. With that, we do support the staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Back to staff.
Yes, Madam Chair, just to address the question of signage, there is a special condition public access signage plan to require a submittal to us a signed plan. I did want to make a slight revision to that just to clarify that something we've been doing in recent years, which is to assure that those signs include an explicit recognition of the Coastal Commission as a participant in providing and working with the city and providing this access. We have some standard language or symbols that we can use to do that, but I think that also helps us to make clear the role of your program and the public state program in providing the public access. So I understand there is a representative from the for the project here. We may want to ask if that's acceptable. We would just adjust the language to incorporate that.
Mr. Stone, you want to come forward and put your name on the record, and if it's just a response to, okay.
Harry Stone, representing 412 Vista Pacifica. Yeah, we'd be glad to give you some credit on this one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I'll come back to the commission. Commissioner Zimmer.
I'm a little bit confused about the history, in particular, in the revised findings, the original approval apparently had incorporated in it an assumption that this access would be available during typical daylight hours. So was that taken as an implication that it could be blocked or fenced at the outset? Or I'm not exactly sure how. Go ahead.
We did not take that position. We acknowledge that the commission's action only required that the easements be open during the daytime hours, but it did not explicitly approve a gate. And so we took the position that the installation of the gate would still require a permit. And that's why this action's before you today.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Their position was that would be a means to regulate the daytime hours, but we still said you could have it open during daytime hours without a gate, and if you want a gate, then that would specifically require a coastal development permit.
Mm-hmm. I guess at first blush, I was a little bit concerned that this was a case where there was a pre-existing prescriptive right, so there was a clear public right to that area, and that I'm assuming that the first owners of those condo units had in their CCNRs notice of those conditions and requirements. And so I understand we're trying to resolve what we see as a violation, but I'm a little bit concerned that whether we're trading away an absolute right that the public had to access that area.
Well, those were the concerns that we had, too, but we felt that in this particular case, with the combination of the improvements to the bluff top viewing easement, that the gate could be acceptable.
Is there any, in terms of the physical, I can understand homeowners who are close to a public access, after dark, if depending on the configuration of their units or their balconies or whatever, that they might have a safety concern, But is that present here? I mean, I'm not understanding. We seem to have opposition from a couple unit owners to this resolution. So I'm not understanding what their concern is.
I believe their concern is that the public is using a path that's fairly close to their condominium units, and that path hasn't been readily open to the public up to this point. And with this permit resolution, that access path will be more available to the public and more used by the public.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission approve the proposed amendment to the Coastal Development Permit number 5-88-784-83 pursuant to staff's recommendation with the addition of the indemnification provision as stated by staff. Recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Brennan, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Madam Chair, I would. I do appreciate staff, and while this is an enforcement action that's been in place for a long time, I know on our strategic plan we were talking about getting the as part of what we want to go forward. I do think that this is a step in the right direction. I do appreciate the Homeowners Association recognizing the rights that are in place. And I do, while I do have concerns about the gate, I think that there might be some misunderstanding in some, we've cleared that up, I think, a little bit in the wording. Sometimes when you're building a place, and if you know there is not going to be a gate, you can certainly maybe with the units, with windows, with things like that, perhaps be able to hire windows, shield the residents perhaps from an open space that's going to stay open 24 hours. But I think we've done a good job here. I do get concerned a little bit about, I think the signage is great. I think in some of the cases we've seen where you have to go enforce where the signage ends up coming down, not necessarily by the homeowners, but by folks that maybe want to, in this case it's a very used area, but where we see signage come down and we've had to go back and enforce to get it back up. So I do hope that we're able to not both the environmental community, the folks that use the stairway, and certainly the Homeowners Association would recognize some ownership of the signage and make sure that it stays in place. And then I guess in just a brief comment I heard, you know, you look at a gate and it, even though the hours are open and the sign might say it's open, it still has a tendency to want to keep you out. So, you know, some people say, well, gee, could there be a one of those automatic arms put on there where the gate's open during daylight hours and closes? And that's a lot of moving parts in a saltwater environment. But I'm wondering if there's some provision that the gate, while it stays unlocked, I recognize that the locking mechanism is open. Is there a provision where the gate actually swings open?
Yes, in this particular case, the gate would be in a locked, open position during the day. And then
okay,
close
thank
night.
You. That's mm-hmm. Okay. So there is a swing arm that actually, or some mechanism that allows that to happen.
Yes.
Yeah. Or human. Okay, you're right. Oh, I worry about that because sometimes I know human beings, I know they've come up with them automatic locking devices, and the timers are set according to the sunset hours, and they're able to go out and do it, not have to have a person there. But that's great to know that it's going to be in the open position. Appreciate that clarification.
Commissioner Kinsey, would you like to speak to your second?
Yep, just briefly, thank you. I think this is really some of the core work that we do is to ensure this public access and to catch it when it's fallen off. There's a couple things that I would ask the staff, a couple questions. One is, given that indemnification is such an important component of what we do, I'm curious as to why we haven't incorporated it into our standard conditions to this point. So you can hold that thought or respond to it. And then the second one was, this mentions a prescriptive rights survey that was done that satisfied the commission's confidence that a prescriptive right existed back in the 80s, and I'm wondering if any litigation that's occurred since then impedes our ability to act similarly. When I think of yesterday and the significant conversation we had about what appeared to be prescriptive rights, and yet we didn't feel compelled to, or even perhaps permitted to recognize them, I'm just wondering whether this was a different time, both in terms of budgets for the commission to be able to do these kinds of surveys, or whether the courts have ruled differently in the intervening years.
Yes. On the second question first, the prescriptive rights. It is a different time in terms of budgets and resources, and our ability to pursue prescriptive rights is partly a function of that. That said, I don't think the overarching principles have changed that much, although there are some changes in the case law that inhibit our ability to fully act upon what we think might be prescriptive rights, like in the case yesterday where we have some pretty strong evidence of public use, but we didn't have a prescriptive right yet established. That's where we're somewhat limited, although that action did have a condition, a standard condition we use in cases like that where the existence of potential prescriptive rights would have to be acknowledged by the applicant. So we did have that. We just didn't have what we felt was the ability to do something in that specific permit. The addendum was addressing with this idea of not interfering with that right, and that's where we had some discussions with our lawyers about our ability to do that or not. That said, we still have a prescriptive rights program, and Linda Loughlin, who you've seen present before, does oversee from time to time active outreach to investigate prescriptive rights, and the case yesterday is a good candidate where we will sometimes have on our website posted information about and inquiries. Have you, if you've used this access way over the years, please provide, fill out the survey and provide the information about when and how many times. And so we have in the past collected evidence to speak to the potential of prescriptive rights. And then, of course, the case ability to develop a prescriptive right through the courts is still there. And in fact, in recent years in Pismo Beach, in fact, we had a case where we were actively concerned about an area of use, a trail down to the beach. We were not able to successfully protect it through our permit action, but neighborhood groups brought a prescriptive rights suit and prevailed, establishing the prescriptive right, which is now open as a public access way. So it's an active area, but it is a little more constrained than it has been in the past.
Before you take up the second one, the other item on indemnification, in our county, we generally have been informed by our council that prescriptive rights are only established through a civil action. So when we talk about a survey that gave us the confidence to impose a condition, was that we were just winging it and just hoping nobody would come after us, and now it's after the fact of...
Legal counsel would like to address that question.
As the commission knows, the standard for conditions under the Coastal Act has always been substantial evidence, and the commission had long considered that if there were substantial evidence of a prescriptive right, although it could not determine the prescriptive right itself, it would impose a condition if there was what it determined to be substantial evidence that such a prescriptive right would exist should somebody bring that action. However, a few years ago, there was a court case that challenged that. The commission lost that. It was not a head-on issue
challenge
in the court case, but it was something that was part of the court case. Since then, and that was approximately, I think, 5 years ago, the commission has not imposed more of those conditions because of that Court of Appeal case.
Thank you.
And just to clarify, maybe I misspoke, but we can still work to gather evidence that might speak to prescriptive rights.
Absolutely.
As distinct from taking a specific permit action.
Or on taking an action that anticipates that a right would exist if it were sought to be perfected.
Which
sounds like what happened here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and here, this was long before
I understand
that case. Mm-hmm. One of the more recent cases that the commission heard where it did consider that it thought it was a prescriptive right, local groups actually did bring such a court case and such a prescriptive right was established.
Yeah.
At the same time that the commission hadn't been able to impose the condition.
Thank you.
So that does happen.
On your second question about indemnification, we did have a specific discussion or deliberation on this point a number of years ago when we updated our fee regulations, which included, and Hope may want to weigh in on this too, a provision to provide for an indemnification condition, but it's not a standard condition because our regulations... the discussion with the commission carved out an exception that we wouldn't be doing that with single-family homes. And I believe that's correct.
In order to change our standard conditions, we would need a rulemaking process. So we do evaluate that on a case-by-case basis, and, of course, the regulations do bar the commission from imposing it when it's a single-family home, but it is a case-by-case analysis.
Thank you.
All right. Is there any unwillingness to vote on this? Seeing none, is there any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the commission hereby approves the Coastal Development Permit Amendment
on the ground that the development as amended and subject to conditions that will be in conformities with the policies of Chapter 3 and adopts the findings set forth in staff report. We're going to take a short break. No? Are we done with...
I don't think there's much left for okay. San Diego, but you do have public comment, so I guess it's up to you.
Yeah, let's take a short break. Let's reconvene and go to the San Diego portion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This next item is item 11. It's the Deputy Director's Report. There are two waivers and one non-material extension to report. There has been no public comment on the waivers. However, we did receive a letter of objection to the extension. It's for a coastal development permit for the extension of 8th Street, 600 feet bayward in Chula Vista. The letter of objection is on the back of the Deputy Director's report. It does not identify any changed circumstances or specific grounds for the objection, and the person has since talked to the port representative who had explained the project and the procedure. Staff does not recommend that the Commission find any changed circumstances in this particular case and that the extension be granted. And therefore, staff recommends the Commission concur with the Executive Director and approve the Deputy Director's report.
Thank you. Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
And item 12 are the items removed from the regular calendar to the consent calendar by staff. There's one item. It's permit number 61213 Sherman. And the conditions are acceptable to the applicant. There is no known public interest in this item. Therefore, staff recommends this item be approved on the consent calendar.
Are there any ex parte? Seeing none,
move approval.
Sorry?
Move approval.
Been moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we unanimously approve the consent calendar.
And item 13A is a time extension request for the City of Oceanside, LCP Amendment 3-12. It's a request to extend the 60-day time limit for Commission action on this LCP amendment. It's an implementation plan amendment that would reclassify a property from Subdistrict 7B, which allows recreational, commercial, and residential uses, to Subdistrict 6A, which is for visitor-serving commercial uses, but it will also add some allowable uses in the Subdistrict 6A and in all commercial districts. Staff needs some additional time to review the submittal. The city is aware of this request, and we're targeting our review to be complete in time for the March meeting in San Diego. Therefore, staff recommends the Commission extend the deadline for Commission action for 1 year, and the motion is on page 1 of the staff report.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on this? Seeing none, Commissioner Sanchez?
I move that the Commission extend the 60-day time limit to act on the City of Oceanside LCP Amendment Number 3-12 for 1 year and recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Brennan. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Submitted.
Commissioner Brennan, to your second. Any unwillingness to be unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we unanimously extend the time limit.
And then the last item for San Diego is items 15A and B. They're combined in one staff report. It's Appeal A6, ENC 0940 and 41, and the applicant is Oaken. These are the revised findings to support the Commission's action on July 11th of this year to approve with conditions a coastal development permit for demolition of an existing 1,200-square-foot single-family residence that currently straddles a two blufftop lots on Neptune Avenue in Encinitas, and construction of a new two-story single-family residence with basement on each of the two lots. The Commission found the proposed new development was consistent with the LCP, so the takings override that the staff had suggested would be necessary to allow the development is not necessary. Most of the changes to these findings relate to striking those takings findings. And specifically, the Commission found that the new structures could rely on the existing seawall and be in conformance with the LCP. However, the Commission is not required to approve additions to the wall or reconstruction of the wall to protect the proposed structures. The conditions of approval acknowledge the homes will be removed if determined unsafe for occupancy should the existing seawall fail to provide protection, and the conditions require periodic reassessment of the stability of the site and the structure throughout the life of the development. Another change made by the Commission and addressed in the findings relates to the location from which the blufftop setback should be measured. In this particular case, the planning director determined the setback could be measured from the existing blufftop retaining wall rather than the previous natural bluff edge, which would be located about 20 feet inland of that wall. The LCP allows for such determinations to be made by the planning director, and in this particular case, the Commission concurred with the city's decision, finding it consistent with the LCP. The staff believes the revisions to the findings accurately reflect the Commission's actions, and the applicant's representative has indicated that they will not oppose the findings. The majority of commissioners on the prevailing side are necessary to adopt the findings. The commissioners on the prevailing side are found on page 2. They are Bochco, Burke, Brennan, Kinsey, McClure, Mitchell, Sanchez, and Stone. And the motion to adopt the findings are on page 6 of the staff report. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you. Are there any expertes on this item? Seeing none, Commissioner Sanchez?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission adopt the revised findings in support of the Commission's action on July 11, 2012, concerning approval with conditions of Coastal Development Permit number A-6-ENC-09-040 and recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. would you like to speak to your motion?
Submitted.
Commissioner Kinsey?
No, thank you.
Is there any unwillingness for those eligible commissioners to vote unanimously yes? Seeing none, the staff, I'm looking for it here, hereby adopts the findings in support of the Commission action on July 11th. So, Commissioner Sanchez.
I move that the Commission adopt the revised findings in support of the Commission's action on July 11, 2012, concerning approval with conditions of Coastal Development Permit number A-6-ENC-09-041 and recommend a yes vote.
Been moved second. By Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Submitted.
To your second. Commissioner Kinsey.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote by those eligible commissioners eligible to vote? Seeing none, the Commission hereby adopts the findings set forth below for the Coastal Development Permit on the ground that the findings support the Commission's decision on July 11th and accurately reflect the reasons for it.
Madam Chair, may I just ask a procedural question?
Absolutely.
In cases like this, for those that are not eligible to vote because they voted against the main motion, are they eligible to comment on the findings? I mean, are we allowed to comment on the findings?
Yes. Any commissioner may comment or speak to the findings. However, the only commissioners eligible to vote are those who were present and on the prevailing side.
Okay. Thank you. Good to know.
And that brings us, I believe, to statewide that we trailed. Is that right?
Yes, that's the end of the agenda other than the public comment.
And statewide.
Oh, statewide, sorry. I'm
Friday.
Sorry.
You know.
We do have the rest of statewide that we trailed other than 19 A and B.
Right. So do we have minutes in our?
Yes.
All right.
Move approval.
Commissioner Sanchez moves approval of the minutes. Commissioner Brennan seconds them. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we unanimously approve the minutes. Are there any commissioner reports? Nope. The Coastal Conservancy has not met since our last meeting. Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy. You're on the Santa Monica Bay Restoration. Do we have a report there?
Yes, and I apologize. I forgot to bring my report, so I'm going to do this from memory. And it was about
3.5 weeks ago. So.
Oh, you'll do great.
Yeah. So we voted on new officers. We have a new chair because ex-commissioner, now Assemblyman Bloom, has moved on. And I believe it's the mayor of Culver City is the new chair. We also had a presentation on whether or not Santa Monica Bay should open up to commercial fishing. And it wasn't so much a resolution of the issue. It was more just an informational presentation. One other thing was that they've started the very first step in the Biona Creek wetlands restoration project. I think public tours and such are beginning. And I think that was it.
Okay. Deputy Attorney General's report.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to introduce to everybody Deputy Attorney General David Alderson, who is here today from the Oakland Office of the Attorney General.
Thank you. Yes, there is one case to report. It is Wildman versus the Coastal Commission. The Court of Appeal, in an unpublished decision, upheld an acceptance of an offer to dedicate a public access easement in Malibu. The offer was irrevocable for 21 years. It was accepted after 21 years, but had never been revoked. Wildman challenged the acceptance, but his challenge was barred by the 5-year statute of limitations. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Lester, anything to add on the executive director's report?
Well, first, I just wanted to underscore the importance of that case for us and the principle that the OTD was still affected, even though it was past the 21 years. I think that's a good decision for the program. Under the executive director's report, I did just want to highlight a couple of things. One was to mention, and as you've seen, we had a start time of 8:30 the first 2 days of the meeting, and hopefully that was working for you. We thought that might be a better optimum balance with the public comment that we need to receive and then getting more of our core agenda work done in the course of a long day, what turned out to be 2 long days in this case, but that was the reasoning behind that, and so it seems to be something that has been okay. The other thing I wanted to mention was, some of you may know, notwithstanding our commitment and desire to move forward with e-government and updating our website, our staff person who has been doing that function for us just retired. So we have a vacancy in that function right now, and we're doing our best to cover certain aspects of the work that he did, getting you the packet, the e-packet, and posting the items on the web and that sort of thing. But it is going to be a bit of a delay in terms of our ability to do some of the proactive work we want to do, including updating the website. But I wanted to just mention that to you so you didn't think our website had disappeared or become moribund. It's a temporary situation. And is there a question or comment on that?
I think there is, Commissioner Sanchez.
Yeah, on the website, that's how I read the staff reports. I noticed this past time there was not a link to the original report, so I'd have to, you know, in order to get going back and forth, I'd have to go, you know, going through everything to get back to the original report. So if you could put that back on, because that was a very nice tool that you had. That when you do have an addendum, you had a link to the original report.
Okay, I will follow up on that. That's a good example of the kinds of glitches
feedback
we might experience in the short run here.
Well, I was going to suggest, you know, I completely spaced it. We missed an opportunity at our last month to have an informal get together about what does and doesn't work for commissioners on this. And so I was going to suggest that each of us email somebody, and maybe it goes to you and you decide what to do with it. There are lots of technical things like that. For example, it's very annoying when you're on an iPad if something has been put in sideways.
Every time you turn that, it's like, Commissioner Bochco has been known to turn her entire computer on its side. So anyway, there are things like that you have no reason to know. Other than when we all walk in with our necks like this because we've been reading our addendum.
I think that's an Apple problem, not a...
So, I mean, I'm just thinking the best way to give feedback. Should we ask commissioners to just email you if they have, or do you want it to go to somebody else?
I think you could email me, and you could copy Al Wenger, who is, you've probably received emails from him about some of this in the past.
Okay.
And we can figure out how to best approach that.
I just think there are lots of small things like that that to
I think there
IT
are a
person.
Ton of those things, and including, you know, as I've said before, my goal is to move us to this digital format completely. We're still dealing with some paper and old processes and production models. I want to move completely to that way, but there are a lot of things like that I think that need to be refined.
Yeah. Okay.
The last thing I wanted to mention was the budget did come out late yesterday. I don't have a specific assessment of that, but Susan Hench did want me to mention that we plan on doing a budget report next month to give you an overview of what that means for us. So,
all right.
I think that's all I had.
So with that, I think we're adjourned, and we'll all meet next. Oh, yeah. Why do I keep forgetting that? I apologize. I apologize. Okay. So, again, I'm going to call three or four names. It doesn't really matter the order that you come forward. Colleen Ganos, Ann Steele, Nell Langford.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioners. I am Nell Langford. I'm with Safe Beach Now. It's wonderful to have you here. I feel like that you're really doing an excellent job upholding the principles and the value and the necessity for the Coastal Act. We have one of the biggest violations of it in the state, which is the rampage that is going on our public beach and dunes. To really see what's going on, it would require that you go out there during holidays and see them dumping their holding tanks, see them lined up selling gasoline, see them, the children, you know, barely getting across the beach for fear of being run over, and the sand that is blowing to the Napomo Mesa and also in Oceano, where I have a beach house, and I've had two customers who had to be taken to the emergency room because of the dust. If you want to see this, please go to our website at safebeachanddunes.org. We have had our camera there during the entire proceeding for the APCD studies on the particulate matter from the inception. Our cameras have been there. We have recorded and documented the history of what's going on, the plume, with all of the dangers downwind. We also want you to know some of the history of why the vehicles are on the beach. One place to look for that in this series, this documentary series, would be The Deadly Dunes and the Dollar, where we actually have gone through and shown the history with maps and details that will help you see how is it that 2 million people are there recreating on the dunes when it is one of the most precious ecological hot spots in North America, where the species from the north and the species from the south come together and have such a glorious biological diversity that we have even got the Pismo Dunes Natural Preserve that is between Pier Avenue and the ODSVRA that vehicles go through every day. It's by the creek if you go out there, starting at the creek, going south until you get to La Grande Track. That's all the Pismo Dunes Natural Preserve. However, the past administration for this so-called park has removed the word natural. Please, when you see it on maps, it is not the Pismo Dunes Preserve. It is the Pismo Dunes Natural Preserve, and all of its regulations are stipulated in the public resources codes, and it is to be protected. It is being practically abolished. We used to have snowy plovers there. We have not had a snowy plover in that region for years, and we've got that documented from their own studies. So please go to safebeachanddunes.org. This is the website for Safe Beach Now. We would have put it under Safe Beach Now, but the off-roaders stole our name. We had to go to federal court to get it back, and they now no longer have it, and we have it back. But it's under safebeachanddunes.org. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleen Knos. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing the last name. Ann Steele. Steve Ray. And you have two people who are ceding their time to you, is that right?
Yes.
So you'll have 9 minutes.
Well, Madam Chair, Honorable Commissioners, my name is Steve Ray, Executive Director of the Banning Ranch Conservancy. First of all, we'd like to welcome new Commissioner, Commissioner Groom, to the panel. We haven't had a chance to congratulate you yet. And for your sake and for Commissioner Wickett, and as a reminder to those of you who have been here a while, Banning Ranch is located in Orange County. It's a 401-acre piece of property located at the mouth of the Santa Ana River. It is the largest parcel of unprotected coastal open space remaining in Orange County. However, a development consisting of 1,375 homes, a resort hotel, and a significant commercial retail space allotment, equivalent to a mall basically, has been approved by the Newport Beach City Council on this property. An application will be presented to the commission in the near future by the developers. As part of the Banning Ranch Conservancy's continuing efforts to inform you about coastal issues relevant to this proposed development, today I'm going to be talking to you about burrowing owls, vernal pools, and unpermitted fencing on the Banning Ranch Mesa. Burrowing owls, as you see here, 7 to 11 inches, are among the smallest species of owls on Earth. They are a species of special concern in California. Very few burrowing owls remain along the coast. In fact, in Orange County, as you can see from the kind of orangish red there along the coastline, in Orange County they're officially classified as extirpated, meaning basically they've been done away with. The primary healthy population in the state has been existing down by the Salton Sea. However, in the last two annual surveys, the number of burrowing owls there has significantly declined, creating a renewed effort throughout the state to protect them wherever they do exist. Well, burrowing owls have been documented over the years in the Banning Ranch grasslands, and these are native grasslands. These burrowing owls are seen in winter when they migrate from their northern ranges down to Southern California. Here I've noted two sites. These are documented sites of wintering burrowing owls on Banning Ranch. And as you can see, both of these are located immediately adjacent to the proposed Bluff Road, which is going to be the major road going through the project development. It's considered a major arterial, four lanes divided and everything else, with all the appurtenances and sidewalks and gutters and everything else. The city and the developer both plan to build this road. And the grading alone for this road will destroy the habitat for the burrowing owl, certainly not even counting the future traffic impacts that would destroy their ability to survive on site. And go back for a moment. Up there you see the top one says burrowing owl Borough 216, February 16th of 11. This is a photo that was taken of the burrowing owl by an amateur birder with the long lens. It's not quite totally focused because it was a telephoto lens. This is on that Banning Ranch Mesa there that I showed you right in the path of Bluff Road. Now, the environmental impact report that was approved by the Newport Beach City Council in July 2012 claims that the development of known burrowing owl winter habitat areas can be mitigated by providing habitat in other areas more, quote, conveniently located away from the development footprint. Now, I don't know how you explain that to the owls that, oh, no, not here, guys, over there now. I don't know, directional signage, maybe that would be good for them. In any case, studies show that burrowing owls often return to the same burrow, so they would be coming back there. They wouldn't be looking around saying, oh, well, let's find another condo somewhere else. It is not known what effect displacing the wintering areas of these burrowing owls will have on their survival along the California coast. We do know it is certainly detrimental at this time and will get worse with future development. 2 weeks ago, one of our citizen monitors, we have a lot of them there, discovered this burrowing owl, which you can see there in the center of the picture. It's kind of poking his head out there in the center there. Discovered him. This was an undocumented burrowing owl that was just recently discovered. And as you can see there, it was December 28th. So it was 2 weeks ago today that this burrowing owl was discovered there. Now, pulling back from this close-up, and you can see him again kind of in the center, that little kind of brownish dot there in the center of the picture. This photo shows the general area of the sighting. Notice in the near background the fence and the truck. Workers were building a new fence where none had previously existed. The fence and the work activity, as you can see, are dangerously close to the burrowing owl and his habitat there. In fact, we have this past week been unable to locate the owl. We've had people out there looking, and we cannot locate him now. This fence activity might have scared him off. We don't know. Well, another issue of significant concern is that fence that I showed you right there. And this fence, matter of fact, you can see the arrow there. That's where the burrowing owl that I just showed you was, and the fence line coming out. I know it's a little maybe hard to see these pictures here, but if you see in the picture, and I don't know, does this have a pointer on it? Here? Oh, here, there we go, yeah. If you look in this picture here, you can see the fence line coming out this way and going across here and then back to the roadway out there. This is where the fence was put in, and again, right along beside that burrowing owl habitat. One of the other problems with this fence, though, first of all of this is in the coastal zone. All of this property here going along this line here, all of this property here is in the coastal zone, including the area that was fenced. There was no permit pulled for that fencing. There was no consultation with the Coastal Commission or, for that matter, any other public agency regarding that. Now, one of the problems with this fence is that it bisects three vernal pools that are in that area. And this area is part of a large vernal pool wetland watershed that covers this portion of Banning Ranch. Now, while the pools are currently dry, the pools are visible during the wet season. These pools have been extensively documented and studied. And the middle pool, go to the next picture here. These are the three pools, as you can, hit the wrong button. Go forward here again. Okay, these are the three pools. This one right here, this one has been documented to have San Diego furry shrimp, which is a federally endangered species. This one over here, we know, has other life forms, ostracods and polywogs. They have not done a documentation study for furry shrimp, but as you can see, the fence cuts right through these vernal pools. Here they are in the wet season. You can actually see the water. This is the one that has the San Diego furry shrimp, the endangered species. This is the one, the fence cut line, this is before the fence went up, obviously, cuts right through here And this is the one that has the other life forms that has not been studied yet. So the problem with this fence line, as I say, is it has not been studied. We do know that on Banning Ranch we have 55 vernal pools. 53 of them would be destroyed under this development plan. At least a half a dozen of them have been documented to have, or eight of them at least, have been documented to have San Diego fury shrimp. So we have, serious concerns about this. This is just a slide I'm going to pass by here. But the issues here are the unpermitted construction of the fence. We need to study all the vernal pools. Bluff Road will destroy much valuable habitat. And the issues are we going to save the habitat? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Brian Stacy? Then Mandy Davis.
Good morning, Chair Schellenberger and commissioners. My name is Brian Stacy. I'm a local commercial fisherman for the past 24 years. I am the most impacted mammal by less. PG&E's passed less. I was a fisheries representative in the Hess negotiations, and I was the first guy to notice less was going on out there. Try to stick to my written comments or I'll get off the path. I uncovered it, and I think the honest folks who are working on it now and the issues surrounding all less and how that will help to keep this type of failure of government on all levels from impacting one resident of our state like PG&E's less has impacted me. It was just me for 18 months prior to the denial of Hess. And I hope that my misery helps fix an obviously broken system. You are now aware of the less issues. It took me investing, my business, my health, everything I own to expose. The failure of CSLC to protect me and my business from less should be enough to tell the commission you need to put PG&E's less and all less on your agenda. For the sake of small commercial fishermen like myself that deserve to be protected from PG&E and or others like them, we need legitimate government like the Coastal Commission to do the right thing on our behalf. I trust this body will take the info I've provided and install protections in the system so that this type of thing does not happen to one citizen in the future. It's just not appropriate treatment or protection like I would hope to get from my government, for myself, my business. There are so many problems with our local resources after PG&E's less. We may never know all of them. Due to the missing CEQA process I identified almost 2 years ago to State Lands Commission, but still was never provided. Less was just allowed to continue, unstudied and unmitigated. And PG&E and Fugro to do whatever damage is done and cover it up. I can only uncover so much. I suspect I will notice it on my hooks if my business survives. After a PG&E's less. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mandy Davis.
Madam Chair, I'm Marla Jo Bruton, and I'm ceding my time to Mandy Davis.
So you are who again?
Marla Jo Bruton.
Okay, great.
Okay. Hello again. My name is Mandy Davis, and I'm spokesperson for the Coast Alliance. This is one of those instances where I wish that I could touch every one of you and download all the information that I have in my head. As Brian has referred to, so many people have done so much research, and you only have a small part of that. And there's so much anecdotal information out there that. I just wish I could zap you. But I will take my small little snippets of time here. First, I would like to give some anecdotal information of my own and then bring everything into focus and why so many of us are here. I am uniquely qualified on another end of the scale from Brian to tell you of the impacts, anecdotal impacts that I've noticed, because I am a naturalist and guide. I not only take people out on kayak trips on the coast, I take people on hiking trips and biking trips and have the opportunity to see the cycles, to notice the creatures, to understand what we're seeing, even though I don't have the ability to be able to dive into the oceans and to see the lack of creatures there during these times. What I have noticed is this, that the cycles have changed. It was heartbreaking as a naturalist out on the estuary to see the amount of brown pelicans, cormorants, and birds that had migrated into the area that normally, under years that do not have the acoustic seismic testing happening, they have the bait fish coming in. They have the food available. There were so many starving pelicans this year that I have a really hard time not talking about it without coming to tears. This was something that we all had to notice. There were places that there were cormorants and pelicans completely non-existent. They completely left the area because of these tests. There were times in between the tests when we have shown you pictures of the abundance, the whales coming in. The feeder fish did come in. And then as soon as those ships came back into the area, they dispersed almost immediately. This is not a coincidence. These are things that many of us that are responsible for and responsive to the natural environment that we work in notice. And I would like to extend an invitation to you. Yes, I do work as a naturalist and guide. I absolutely love what I do. I also live on the estuary on my boat. So the next time you guys are here, I am for Coast and for myself inviting you to go out to take a kayak trip with me. I'm associated with a whole variety of business people in the area. They'd love to take you on a whale watching trip, but you have a personal invitation. Now, talking about personal invitations and personal responsibility, you've heard a tremendous amount of information, and I'm not going to really reiterate a lot of that, although I will punctuate some of my comments with some more information. But what I would like to do is tell you this, is that I am looking at a group of people that this is your business, this is your intention, this is why you are here, is to make sure that the Coastal Act is enforced, to make sure that our resources and that which we love is protected. This is your responsibility to the business people, your responsibility to the oceans, your responsibility to me, the Coast Alliance, all of these folks that have taken their time to speak to you. If I were you guys, I'd be steamed big time, because here's the reality. CSLC, whether or not it's because of their own ineptness as an agency, they have, or if it's because they have, because of their associations with corporate entities, decided to give these guys carte blanche on this kind of testing, the acoustic seismic testing off of our coastal waters. Doesn't matter what the intention was. What they have done is they have deprived you as a commission, you as staff, of your responsibility and your right to hear these permitting processes, because I can guarantee you have enough information to know that all of those permits that were issued were done under circumstances that were over the thresholds that have been established, all of these permits should have been coming before you. And every single one of them has violated the Coastal Act and the CEQA process. You have been deprived by the CSLC, and it is up to you as staff and as a commission to take issue with this. We have given you plenty of information. We will give you plenty of opportunity, and ask us for more info if you need it. Thank you.
Thank you. Brian Stacy? Is Brian here? Oh, I'm sorry. All right. Let me run through to be sure. Colleen Gnos and Ann Steele, also not here. Steve Matthew, bring us home.
Okay, Steve Matthew, AGP Video. First yesterday morning, last today, good deal. You caught me off guard calling me first yesterday. The thought that I really wanted to share with commission and staff and everyone watching is that I want to thank the Coastal Commission and staff in general for the new contract. This is the first meeting of our new contract to continue offering these services. And what I'm really thanking for is the opportunity to provide these services. This is something that I've been actually pursuing since 1999. From 99 to 2006, I came out 2 to 3 times a year, either of my own volition or on request from Peter or individual commissioners. I spent my birthday 2004 covering the LNG and for Meg Caldwell. And the offshore drill leases and things like that, I came out on large issues, trying to foster what it is that we're doing, which is providing a historic document in a larger sense of all of that takes place at the commission meetings. It's progressed to the point where we now have a bank starting in 1999 to the present of all of the meetings that have been covered from 2007 to now includes everything. And our site, calspan.org, is a source of information that I wanted to share with all the new commissioners as a tool that can be used to look at all the issues that are coming before you and what has happened previously with regards to these issues. It's now also available, even the times that I wasn't here. I was watching it on my cell phone, listening, driving around the county to get back here, and not everybody knows that. So I wanted to share that information. The information at CalSPAN is an aggregate of not only the videos, but all of the documentation, staff reports, motions, and votes, and everything that was ever on record that was online. We collect all of that together and hyperlink it through the site, through the video. So on any given issue, you can pinpoint it and go right to it. Anyway, just a little bit of background on that, and thank you again for the opportunity to continue providing this service. It was real hard. It took us 8 years to figure out how to get the money together, I mean collectively, in order to maintain this. And it's going to take everybody being on board with it to keep it continued because of the way budget issues are and everything. So thank you.
Thank you, Steve. We have a question for you. Commissioner Brennan.
Yeah, Steve, thank you for the great work. And you're right, I have used the website, and I appreciate it, especially and other streaming that you do, Fish and Game, some of those other commissions.
Right.
Certainly has helped in relation to some of the background and research we do here. So I want to thank you for continuing that. But a quick question. I stop in San Luis a bit. I go back and forth to Santa Cruz a lot. And when I'm here, I've turned on in the hotel room, and I've managed to catch the Coastal Commission on local. And I'm thinking, is that just you supply that link to them and they load it on and keep it there? Because I'm thinking that would be a great way for other folks, not that we need to be across, but the work we do and the issues we deal with need to really go up and down the coast. And I know those stations, public broadcast local stations, are always clamoring for
decent content. So yeah, I'm wondering, is that something that you do specifically here, or the opportunity to perhaps broaden that scope?
That is a hard nut to crack, actually, because there's no overarching organization. We actually, we're out of Morro Bay. This was born an animal of cable TV, and I progressed it as rapidly as I could. It started here in 96, so I was out looking at you guys in 3 years. And then I actually had to air what we were producing here on the California channel initially, before internet, before we were able to do this whole streaming thing. The California channel actually is a funny quick story. I overloaded them with content in a matter of like a year and a half, and they shut off all outside agency productions as a result of it. We do have an agreement, and we do air it on the Monterey government access channels and one other county that's escaping me right now. It's a one-by-one county, or actually system, cable system endeavor is how to do that. Obviously, San Luis Obispo has got benefit of us being born here, and as a matter of fact, we run all the government access channels in San Luis Obispo. So we air this on everything available, and are pursuing doing it elsewhere in the state, but it's disorganized. It's really disorganized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Steve, I'll follow up with you offline just because I think it might be something to go in.
Sure.
Even if it's the archive meetings, obviously not live, because of perhaps it has to go through the other things, but we can perhaps solve that. Thank you.
Sure. You bet. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Dr. Lester.
I was just going to say acknowledge what Steve was saying, and that it is a great resource, much like the California Coastal Records Project became this source for us to better understand the coast. This resource, and coupled with our website, is now becoming a great comprehensive archive of the Commission's work, and that is one of the pieces of moving forward with e-government, including archiving information that and providing better guidance back out. That's a piece of that puzzle that we will look at improving or making even more accessible.
Great. Thank you. So with that, I think we are done for the day, for this month. Thank you all very much. Travel safely, and see you in Redondo Beach next month. Thank you.